Reggie Miller talks about it all the time. Like,
oh,
you
yeah.
know, he used to talk all kinds of trash. He said, I probably wouldn't have made it through half the season. You know,
I remember what he said that. Yep. I was like, you're right. You would have got tossed in the first quarter. No chance.
Yeah, you would have got it. You would have got tossed.
What's good, basketball fans? This is Aaron Washington. You're listening to BCB, Business Casual Basketball. We simplify the game a dollar at a time over here. You know how it goes. Glad to be back with you guys for another pod, another episode. This is one number 140, and this is going to be a very interesting episode. So this one might be a little bit lighter on the X's and O's of the game, the basketball strategy. This is a little bit more of just pressing matters that we have to address in the NBA right now. So this is going to be some real talk. Getting into some real issues here with my special guest for this evening, Amber Vickers. The vets will know about Amber. She's been on before, but she is the director of Hoops Unwrapped over at Unwrapped Sports. She also takes part in a few podcasts, Worst Take OKC podcast, Ladies First, that will be live later on tonight. So be sure to keep an eye on that one. And then Step Back Sister. So she is very involved in podcast games. She has a lot going on. So I'm glad that she took the opportunity here to join me because she has a little bit of a unique perspective pertaining to some injuries and maybe what Jamal Murray is going through a little bit with his situation. So Amber, thanks so much for joining me this evening. Glad to have you back on again. And I'm excited to see some of these takes that are going to be fired off tonight, because it's not too often that we get to get really deep and real about some of these pods here and about sports in particular. So thanks for joining me this evening. I'm excited.
Thank you, Aaron, for having me. Like he said, I'm involved in a couple of podcasts. I have a lot going on, but I love to talk hoops with someone else, of course. And it's been a crazy year in the NBA. It's been a crazy year. And you could go deep into why the year has been so crazy. And I'm pretty sure we're going to touch on some of those topics. But I appreciate you guys for having me, of course. I've been on the pod before talking hoops. So I'm just ready to talk about hoops.
Yeah, same here. So Amber, I think it's about that time. It's time to get real. It's time to get into the NBA. It's time to get into these technicals. So that's going to be the first topic of our conversation. So like I already tell, this is going to be a hot topic here. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, watching this pod can relate to this. Like, so I want to start off with this. Like, NBA games are a thrilling event. There's a certain pace and atmosphere to games that allow us to really enjoy the product, to get deeply invested in it. And when you have situations like March 2nd, Devin Booker against the Lakers, he spun the ball to a ref a certain way, put some spin on it. Ref didn't like how that went, got a tech. Montrezl Harrell the next day played the Kings. He shouted and one, just getting hype about an and one, gets a quick tech. Schroeder and Kyrie Irving, just last week they played the Lakers and Nets, hotly contested game, nationally televised. They jawed a little bit, trash talk, things like that. They both got ejected. And guess what happened after that? The Lakers went on a 22-9 run that sealed the game. So they went up. It was 88-71, and it was a wrap. And then last night, this is the latest example, Amber, Terrence Davis was given a technical foul. He had another poster dunk. We've seen tons of poster dunks. He got hype. You know, he's excited, as he should be. That was a crazy play. And he gets a technical because I think he, like, hit the ball after ducking the ball that the ref saw as, like, taunting or something. I'm just like, it's just wild that these things are happening with these players and the pace of the game. So let us some of your takes here first, Amber. I want to hear what you have to say about these technical fouls and how they may be affecting the pace of the game, the spirit of the game. What is so just blatantly wrong with the way these refs are calling the games these days?
Well, you know, I was born in 87. I'm going to go back. I was born in 87. Yes, I'm revealing my true age. Growing up watching basketball in the 90s and early 2000s and watching it now, I've been blessed and fortunate enough to see generations change, right? Mm-hmm. Back then, it was more physical, way more physical. And today's game, it's hard for me to watch at times because I like a good pace, a good flow, like you talked about. Everything is challenged. I'm like, we have to stop for this. Is this a flagrant one? Is this a flagrant two?
Right.
There is no fluidity through the game of basketball anymore. I would just love for the games to just flow. Mm-hmm. Guys jawing at each other. Okay. They're jawing at each other.
We like that. That's part of basketball, part of sports. Competition.
I love it. You know? Because if we have referees in a pickup game, some in some games it wouldn't last. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because that's a part of the game of basketball.
Right.
They also
right.
have to understand these athletes grew up playing basketball, a lot of street ball too. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of street ball incorporated into the NBA. We saw that right. back in the Anwar era. So I don't understand why the referees don't understand the backgrounds of NBA players. That's an issue as well. That is mm-hmm. a huge issue. I don't think people think about that enough. These players really hold back. They really hold back for. Well,
I know they do. They want to let it fly.
Yep. Oh my goodness. And now if there's no fans, you can really hear what's going on in the court. And mm-hmm. I love everything. It. Look, yep. I feel like I have a courtside seat without paying $2,000 for a courtside seat. I'm just saying.
Exactly.
But the way the game is officiated, yes, players are better athletes today. Mm-hmm. Yes, the NBA is softer today. Now, is that because players are better athletes, or is that because the referees want to feel like they want to control the game more? Now, that's the question that a lot of people need to think about. Mm-hmm. With the way the NBA is set up, you watch it to be entertained. You watch it for flow. Exactly. I think a lot of people watch football. I love the flow of football. I love it. I don't like as many commercials in the college game, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Sure.
But I love the way that football flows. I love the way it flows. Yes, it's become more violent because they're athletes. The athletes are becoming more stronger and faster, and that's going to happen with time. The changing of the guard is very interesting. You can have five guards on the floor in the NBA these days.
You're right.
The athleticism is through the roof in the NBA. Less physicality, I think, more athleticism. So are the referees looking at that? Or what are they kind of judging their, how do I say this? How are they basing these technicals? Do they mm-hmm. want to get a control of the game early? Like, okay, we're not going to let Kyrie and Dennis talk trash. It's the Lakers and the Nets. Now I have a question for you. What they would have thrown Kyrie out if LeBron, AD, if everybody was full, had their full horses, what they would have thrown Kyrie out?
You know, I'm inclined to say they still would have done it. Okay. You know, now if we're talking about LeBron was directly involved in the incident, and if we're saying like would he have gotten thrown out, that's different. I think like they're probably gonna like hold back a little bit because it's like, hey, LeBron is LeBron, Davis is Davis, they're the main draws. Sure, he could be the sacrificial lamb, we could throw him to the wolves, it's no big deal, whatever. I know that the same kind of play, you could think of that like with Kyrie Irving's situation. I know he got thrown out of the game. But, you know, with the Nets, like, I'm trying to remember, was Durant in that game that they played against each other? Because I honestly can't remember. They're shuffling in and out so much. I'm just like,
I'm trying to figure it out too. Was Kevin Durant? Wait a minute. Yes or no?
Because if he's in the game, then it's like maybe it makes it a little bit easier to kind of toss him.
I think Kevin Durant did play, but I think it got out of hand and he took Kevin Durant out. I want to say he played, but I know Varley didn't play because his hamstring. But
yeah, of course.
I think Kevin Durant played. I think he did.
Yeah. So what I'm inclined to think is that they want to get a handle on the game. So I want to go with your point about mm-hmm. they want to control the action. They don't want anything to get out of hand, and they really pull their guns early. So I think it could be the first few minutes of a game, you know, if a guy's drawn, tentacles are thrown. But the problem is I feel like there's no leeway. I feel like there's no warning. There's no runway to kind of let these guys do a little bit and then kind of say, okay, you got to reel it back in a little bit. You know, I thought about this quote from Eaton Thomas, a former NBA player. He is a writer for basketballnews.com, and he had a great article on this. And basically what he was saying is that like athletes are not emotionless like beings. Like we have feelings, we have emotions, especially in the heat of a basketball game. Basically, and this is another good part he said, ejections should be a last resort, not your first. Because that's the problem I think today is like referees kind of use that as like their primary weapon to address the situation, as where it should be a secondary or kind of like last resort when everything else fails. Like if you kind of tell these guys you need to rail it in, they don't listen, it gets worse and worse, then you need to step in and have these guys ejected. But how about this, Amber? What if the referees, instead of just tossing these guys, what if we adapted a little bit of what hockey has to offer, where guys are penalized, maybe they just have to get away from the game for a few minutes, they're benched for 5 minutes or something like that. It kind of let the situation de-escalate and kind of fade a little bit instead of just outright tossing these guys. What are your thoughts about that strategy? Could that work in the future?
It could work. Now I have a question, kind of pertaining and piggybacking off that question. Kevin Durant did play. He played 24 minutes, had 22 points, by the way.
Okay.
I want to look that up to make sure. I'm like, I remember Kevin Durant on the floor, but they went on that crazy run, as you talked about earlier, and it just got out of hand, gave the Lakers momentum. Mm-hmm. Now, does it depend on why you got tossed, of how you'd be penalized? So say, for instance, if you got into a fight, they're going to throw you out the game for that.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Every time.
But if you're just jawing back and forth, could you have a penalty box, you know, like they have in hockey? They call it a penalty box. Mm-hmm. A penalty bench, I guess you call it for the NBA.
Right.
Now, if you're just jawing back and forth like Kyrie and Dennis Schroeder did, or the way Devin Booker spun the ball at the ref, say, hey, you know, you can't come in for 2 minutes or whatever that is, and you can come back. Mm-hmm. Will they have a level of penalty? Will there be levels to it?
That's a good question. I think they can, because, you know, every offense is not created equal. Like, some are more serious. So I feel like they can get off by addressing most of these guys maybe under one umbrella. So maybe it's 2 minutes, maybe it's 3 minutes. Because, you know, if we start trying to divvy it up, I mean, there can be so many different ways we kind of define these violations. So it could be, oh, that's definitely a 2 minute violation. No, that should be three. That should be four. You know, I think just introducing it in some fashion at all would be a huge step forward. So even if it's like everybody that pushes the boundaries gets 3 minutes and just start from there. And then, you know, if they escalate the situation and they're not listening to reason, then you can kind of pull out the technical foul card or the ejection card or whatever the case is. Because the big problem with what we have going on now is, let's say it was that situation with Montrezl Harrell against the Kings. He wasn't even talking to a ref. He wasn't talking to a player. He just shouted in excitement and emotion, passion. And that was a technical. So like, even though that didn't directly get him tossed, it's that two technical rule that got him thrown out the game. So that's where the problem comes in, because it's not like he was in an argument. He wasn't throwing punches or anything. He was just hype after a play. So that's why I think the boundaries, the rules need to be changed a little bit. Give these players a little more leniency, especially after a highlight play, because I think they deserve to have a longer leash in those situations, because I think, honestly, they deserve it. You make a great play, hey, let them get hype a little bit, you know?
And with this year, I wonder, with the technical fouls and the ejections, have they gone up? Because a lot of people have pent up aggression because of COVID. Like, some of these teams haven't played in so long. They're like, oh my goodness, I'm just itching for competition.
Gotta let it out. Yeah.
Gotta let it out some type of way. So I wonder what the technical, what the ratio to technicals and ejections are from this season till, I wouldn't even say last season, because last season wasn't played fully, but the season before that, when we had a full season. So I wonder what that ratio is, because some of this is pent up aggression. I'm just, you know, you're a male, you have testosterone, you understand. you haven't played it so long, and you're frustrated, and you, especially if your team is not doing well, or if you're fighting for a playoff spot.
Yep.
How much aggression do these guys have pent up in playing right now?
I think it's a lot. For a lot of reasons.
It's a lot. And a lot of guys are frustrated too. So,
yeah. And you got to think, like, let's use Zach LaVie as an example. Like, earlier today, it was announced that he won't be back for 10 to 14 days because he's entering into the health and safety protocols. So what if he comes back and then it's like, whoa, wow, the Bulls are, you know, I'm not entirely optimistic that this will happen, but let's just say the Bulls go on a run and it's like, oh, they're a game out of 10th. Zach LaVie comes back, you know, they're playing, you know, a team above them in the ranking. Let's say they're playing the Boston Celtics or something. It's a pivotal game. They have to get that game. You know, LaVie comes back and it's like, it's go time. We got to get that play-in spot, because that's the whole reason we got Vucevic in the fold, is to make a run for the playoffs. So you got to think, in that situation, there's more on the line. There's more emotion. Guys are having to set up because of COVID. There's the play-in tournament. So, like, more teams are competitive for longer. Like, things like that really play a part. And I think that's why it's a good point you brought up about the buildup of emotion and things like that. And when these guys step on the court, it has to be a place where they can feel like they can express themselves, because that's what makes certain players who they are, is their expression. That's what made MJ the way he is, Gary Payton. Like, you know, you grew up in the, you know, a prior era. You know how those guys were on the court and how they conducted themselves. So let's see a little bit more of that, because honestly, it wouldn't hurt the game. And it shows that these guys they care and they're passionate about it. So I don't see the harm that's done, as long as there's still a leash, there's still boundaries in place to keep from having another Malice in the Palace incident, you know?
Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
Yeah, Malice in the Palace, I remember watching that game. I was watching with my mom. She was like, Amber, what is going on? I said, Mother, I don't know. I really don't.
Players jumping into the stands. Like, imagine if we had Twitter back then.
Yeah. The backgrounds that some of these players come from is different. That's why I say the referees need to adjust to how these NBA players came up. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a different era coming in. So the KD and the LeBron are kind of, you know, in their last part of their career. Well, I don't know. KD, maybe not. I mean, when you're a shooter like that, you can last forever. But I'm just saying.
That's true. That's true.
They're in double digits in their careers, and you have this new generation that's coming up. And I heard this from a friend of mine who works for the Thunder. He said that these young players do not respect the older generation.
Interesting. Interesting.
They respect them, but on the court, they play a different style of basketball because they grew up in a different style, you know, watching a different era. Right. And I remember when Draymond Green made their quote about today's NBA players being soft, the younger generation being soft, and everybody wants to be buddy-buddy. And, you know, I remember that quote from Draymond Green not too long ago. Mm-hmm. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But I had a buddy from the Thunder to say, when they look at veterans, they're like, okay, he's a vet. When they go to practice, they try to isolate their vet on the wing. Or because they don't respect the older generation at all. Now, why is that? Why don't younger players respect the older generation? I wonder that.
I feel like it's partly because there's not a lot of common ground. Like you said, they grew up in a different era. The basketball was played differently. Like, it's hard to really respect someone, even if they've had a lot of success, if they can't relate to your situation. So you're approaching the same topic from different viewpoints, different angles. So it's like, yeah, you were an all-star, but you played in a day and age where the average score of a game was 102 instead of 120, and teams shot 15 threes a game instead of 45. Mm-hmm. So we didn't play the same game, and we don't have that common ground. I feel like that's where the division rises, is this, that we don't have something to kind of rally around, some kind of like commonality in the game, to answer your question. So do you feel the same about that as a reason why that is?
I think that is. And I think that even I refer to music. I know in music, I've watched a couple of things on YouTube, and the younger generation of music artists don't respect the older generation music artists. Mm-hmm. So I think it's these kids these days, I call them kids because I'm in my 30s. The younger generation, I call them the younger generation.
Yeah.
It's just different. Everything is different. Now, were technical fouls called as much back then? No. upside your head. It's a common foul. Y'all has to be reviewed for 5 minutes and it's a flagrant. You know what I mean? Yep. So, and Reggie Miller talks about it all the time. Like, you know, he used to talk all kinds of trash. He said, I probably wouldn't have made it through half the season. You know?
I remember what he said there. Yep. I was like, You're right. You would have got tossed in the first quarter. No chance.
Yeah, you would have got tossed. So it's just a different era. And I have to respect the era because I'm a fan. of the game. And I'm also an X's and O's lady. And I like to really watch the game and appreciate the game for what it's worth and dive in as much as I can. But sometimes some of these games are very hard to watch. Sometimes they are.
I'm in agreement, especially when threes are being hoisted. Teams go on a run. There's a back and forth. Everything is just clicking and flowing. And then you have something that kind of stops it. And here's another point we have to address here with technical fouls. It's how they accumulate through the season. Because as you're aware, once you get to a certain point, you are suspended. And that has implications on playoff matchups and seeding and things like that. So that's why, even though on the surface it doesn't seem like a big deal, we have to address this because it has repercussions that could last past a certain game if this continues with certain players like a Draymond or a Montrezl Harrell, these guys that have emotion. It could affect their teams in a very profound way later on down the road. So that's why I just hope they at least look at this and address it and treat it like it's an issue, because I think it is, and it's something that needs to be modified in one way or another.
I have a real question for you when it comes to technicals.
Hit me.
What if you get suspended for one game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have your COVID test, and then you come back positive, and your team's in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range, and you're somebody like Luka Doncic, because I think he's second in technicals in the NBA behind Draymond.
I think so.
I think he's second.
Yeah.
So what if Luka Doncic gets his technicals, he reaches his quota, he sits out a game, tests positive for COVID. Mind you, Dallas is fighting for spot right now. They're fighting. They're trying to get out of the play-in game as much as possible. You should have seen the shot he did last night. It just tells you everything you need to know. Memphis, how do you? Oh, my goodness. What if he tests positive for COVID and can't play 10 to 14 days? Mind you, there are only about 18 games left in the season. That would affect – Dallas could not make the playoffs because of that. So that's something to think about as well.
Yeah. Everything has an effect on the game, even though it may not seem like a big deal in that moment. Like there's long lasting effects from this. So hopefully the NBA looks at that. So that's definitely an issue that's been kind of roaming the NBA sphere, if you will. Another huge issue is one that Jamal Murray's injury in particular kind of brought about. If you go on Twitter, if you go on these talk shows, if you do anything like that has anything to do with the NBA, it's clear that Jamal Murray's injury is sent a shockwave through the league. You know, if you look at it just in the context of the Nuggets, it's definitely a tough blow, but it raises questions. It raises questions about this season, how it's been structured with scheduling, you know, how many games are squeezed into a short window. It raises questions about the pace of the game, the way the game is played, which is kind of a little bit what we touched on earlier. The pace of the game is crazy. You made a good point on this earlier. It's more about athleticism than strength. So a lot of times, a lot of these injuries are non-contact. So I think maybe back in the day when it was more about smashing and banging, guys would get hit and that would cause injuries. Now you see a guy like Jamal Murray, he just steps, he takes a step, his knee shifts, and it causes an ACL tear. So I think that's, you know, something we're seeing in the game today that's changed a little bit. And it's been reported on Twitter that ACL tears, I believe, are up this year from years past. There's been a couple more than we're used to seeing, and maybe that's why. So before we get to like the kind of bigger overhead topic of this injury, let's look at how this affects Denver in particular. So obviously, Denver's going to have to compensate with increased playing time with some other players like Campazzo, who has been a pleasant surprise, the older rookie that came in this season for Denver, as well as PJ Dozier, the shooting guard. You know, he's going to take some responsibility. And then the Austin Rivers signing, he's reported to come in to pick up some of that slack as well at the guard spot. So I'm looking at their place in the standings right now as of today. And they're the fourth seed. They're only three games back of the Clippers, and they're one game ahead of the Lakers and 3.5 games ahead of the Blazers. So they're right there in the thick of the playoff race, and every game matters. So I guess to lead this off, Amber, how are you feeling about Denver's chances about being competitive in the regular season? And then after that? Like, are they a first round out with all Jamal Murray, or do you give them hope to maybe squeeze by a little bit more because of how dominant Jokic has been recently?
This is dicey because it depends on the matchup. I honestly think it does. Now, the Clippers keep on winning. They're 7-0 with Rondo. Makes sense. They need a floor general. Duh, you should have got him in the offseason, but that's neither here nor there. Pat Bev is out 3 or 4 weeks. He had surgery on his hand.
Yep.
Okay. But the Clippers are playing pretty good basketball under Ty Lue. Shout out to Ty Lue.
True.
Now, Phoenix won't move. Utah won't move. As much as people, I don't know what it is about Utah that people don't like. People just do not like Utah. I'm like,
I don't get it.
Even the networks don't show Utah love. And Utah's number one in the West. But they'll play Dallas Mavericks every other day on TNT. But, you know, hey. And if Phoenix is right there, they're getting no respect either. You got the Clippers at 3. You got Denver at 4. The Lakers at 5. Portland hanging on to that 6th spot. And you got Dallas at 7. Who's at 8 now? Is it Memphis is at 8. Golden State's at 9. San Antonio's at 10. I think it kind of flopped last night, but Memphis needed that win last night, and they just didn't get it. So how far do the Nuggets slip? How far do the Lakers slip? Portland is struggling right now. Portland is struggling to get wins. They have one of the toughest schedules left in the league. Aaron Gordon has played very well for Denver.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking for Monte Morris to step up a little bit more. Morris to step up a little bit more off the bench. I like PJ Dozier as well. Michael Porter Jr. has been the Nuggets' second best player all year. I'm not a fan of his defense. I've said that plenty of times. But
neither am I.
Offensively, he brings them a different type of game. But I do think, this is just my honest opinion, this is before Jamal Murray got hurt. Denver is not the same team they were last year because they do not have a Jerian Grant. And that's what they needed in the playoffs. That's why they made that run last year. Jerian Grant was playing great defense. He knocked down shots. He created his own shot when he needed to. He understood his role with the Nuggets, and that's what got him his big payday with Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have that. And when the game slows down, they need that. They were out Torrey Craig, too. You know, so how can Jermichael Green fill that shoe of basically Torrey Craig? He's a bigger, more physical version of Torrey Craig. I think Jermichael Green shoots the ball a bit better than Torrey Craig, but Torrey Craig is a little more athletic on the wing.
Right.
How do they replace Jerian Grant and Torrey Craig? Gary Harris really didn't play much last year because he was in and out with injury. And then you have to think about Jamal Murray. He's not going to be there either. I mean, he got hot in the bubble, and that's one reason why they were able to go as far as they did. How does Denver compensate with that in the playoffs? Because they're gonna need that. How do they do
that?
Big
time. Big time. That's a good point. I mean, you got to start with Jamal Murray and kind of work your way down. I mean, obviously, if it wasn't for his play, they would have lost in the first round last year. So we have to address that first and foremost. And then you bring up Jerami Grant. I think they did a good job at addressing that need because I think before they got Aaron Gordon, I mean, there's a gaping hole at that position.
Yeah.
But now that they have Aaron Gordon, I think he replaces most of what Jerami Grant offered. He has the athleticism that Jerami Grant did. You know, he's a great cutter, a great match for Jokic offensively. Good three-point shooter, I'd say about on par with Jerami Grant there as well. I feel like it's a slight downgrade defensively, even though Gordon can guard, you know, probably threes and fours pretty well. He's going to be taken advantage of if he's out there trying to guard Damian Lillard and guys like that. He's going to get blown by. But he's an adequate defender. So, I think the bigger issue for them is going to be at the guard spot because you're looking at a guy like Dozier, very athletic player. There's signs of a good playmaker there. You know, I was surprised to see his assist percentage is pretty solid. So he could be a decent playmaker for him. He doesn't have that kind of self-creation game. You know, he's not a shooter right now. So he's going to need other guys to kind of get him involved in it, in the offense. And then Campazzo, I mean, like Campazzo is just like he reminds me of like TJ McConnell. It's just one of those little guys that just like, he's like always flying around the court, just throwing nice passes and just getting up into people. Like I like Campazzo, But I don't like the fact that they're going to have to like rely on him more, Monte Morris more, because you know, in a playoff matchup, if you're playing the Lakers and the Clippers, like they're going to get exposed in a big way. Yeah. And I feel like their offense is not going to be able to compensate for that. So regular season, they'll be just fine. They could probably still end up around the fourth seed. I feel like they might hold their spot. But the playoffs, I don't know. I mean, depending on who they play, that's their first round out. I mean, if they play the Lakers, I'm taking the Lakers. You know,
yeah.
if it's the Blazers, I might give them a chance. But it's just it's a tough blow all the way around. They were dark horse title contenders, and I think that's pretty much out the window, unfortunately, after that injury.
Yeah. Now, what do you think Mr. Rivers will be able to provide for Denver? More shooting defensively? Defensively, I think he might be their best wing defender. You think? Maybe?
Yeah. I could see that.
I'm thinking at their roster. I'm thinking about their roster. He might either top two or three wing defenders. Yeah, he might be.
Definitely.
Shooting. His shot, it's always been weird for me. It's always been weird to me the way he shoots the ball.
Hit, miss. Yeah, he gets hot. Yeah. Hey, I'll say this. He can get hot because I went back and I looked at those numbers that he had back in January. I think Knicks, he was playing Utah, and he had 5 for 5 from three. He went 10 for 10 in the first half, 25 points, one half. So the guy can get hot. He can shoot the ball in spurts. But over a playoff series, I'm like, I don't know how much I trust him in that scenario, you know?
Yeah, but his defense, I think, is what's my dog's barking, excuse me. His defense is what's most important to me. I think he will bring a different element on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Denver can score. Can they score with the likes of Portland, Lakers when they're healthy, Clippers to some extent, Utah's very efficient at scoring. Even Phoenix is efficient at scoring. Can they do that? Even the Mavs can score a lot of points. So if they say, for instance, okay, let's throw a scenario out here. If they got the Lakers are fifth, I don't see the Lakers move into they could probably swap positions 4 or 5, but I don't see the Lakers get in the top three because I think the Clippers stand tall. I think Phoenix and Utah, I think that's pretty solidified.
Mm-hmm.
Could the Lakers drop down to 6? The way that Portland's playing right now, I don't see that.
Yeah.
Could Denver drop down to 6? I don't know. If they match up with the Clippers, how do you see that? If they match up with the Lakers, how do you see that? I mean, that would be a tough first round matchup for either.
It really would. I don't like any of those scenarios, honestly. I think the only matchup I would take Denver in maybe is Portland. Because they can't stop anybody. Like, I think I saw – it was Stat Muse earlier, like today or yesterday was like – or somebody on Twitter was saying that Portland, this is like one of the worst defensive seasons in history that Portland is having.
Yeah,
so if you think about – so I'm like – you put it like that, I'm just like, I don't see how – because MPJ, Aaron Gordon, Jokic, like those guys are going to get hot. They're going to light it up. Austin Rivers, they're going to get hot. So I could see Denver taking a Portland series, but I wouldn't take them in any other series, honestly, with any of these other teams that they might be matching up against, because they're not going to be able to get – I don't think they're going to get a high enough seed to be able to play like a Memphis or a Dallas or something. Mm-hmm. So that's their issue there. But if we zoom out a little bit, Amber, we look at how this injury kind of impacts the state of the NBA now as a whole, we have to think about, you know, like this shortened season. So this is where a lot of the questions have come in. People are saying, like, the NBA made a huge mistake in coming back, you know, just like, I don't know how long it was after the championship, like 40 days or, you know, something like that after the championship, and having them play 5 games in 7 nights and all these back-to-backs and just loading the schedule up. And the concerns are valid. And I do think it's playing a part in some of these injuries because the guys are just getting to be – fatigued. Because think about this. Here's where I kind of see parallels between the last season and this season as far as like fatigue. So you look at the Denver Nuggets, like Jamal Murray, they played deep into the playoffs last year.
That's
you know, major injury. You look at the Miami, Jimmy Butler missed some time due to COVID, of course, but he's been having nagging injuries throughout the season. Bam has missed time. Goran Dragic has missed a lot of time. Like, a lot of their players have been hurt. They went to the finals. The Lakers had their top two players hurt. They went to the finals. Now, if we swap it around a little bit, look at the top two teams in the West, Utah and Phoenix. Neither of them went deep in the playoffs last year. Phoenix didn't make the playoffs, and the Jazz were out in the first round. Some of the best health they've had, those two teams in the whole NBA.
Yeah.
Like, Donovan Mitchell's played like every game. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Gobert. They've missed like hardly any games. So I think that's where we're seeing a parallel based on like how deep into the playoffs did you play last year? I think that's playing a part. But I'm not sure I'm on all the way on board when people are saying they make it too cut and dry. It's like they should have done this instead of that, and that's it. Because if we did play the season later, or, you know, space the season out, there would have been consequences to that path. So it would have ran into the Olympics, maybe missed the Olympics. Revenue is down even further, missing out on Christmas games, things like that. So, like, what's your take on this? Because I don't feel like it's fair to just say, like, well, we shouldn't have done this and we should have done that. And it was like it make it seem like an easy decision, because I feel like it wasn't as easy a decision as people are making it out to be. So I just wanted to see what you thought about that.
Here's my take on it. With the money rules everything, not to refer to Wu-Tang, but it does. And they wanted to put out, they lost so much money last year. The NBA lost a ton of money last year.
Yeah.
They wanted to put out product as quickly as possible and try to do it in an effective, efficient way, but they failed. That's just what it came down to. Okay, we're going to give you a shorter season, but you're going to play all these back-to-backs, right? The All-Star game, we're going to force you to play an All-Star game that you didn't want to play in the first place. There was no preseason. There was no training camp. So you're just going into it like, okay, I'll play some pickup over the summer. I got a couple of workouts in. Like, okay, I guess we're ready to play. That was not fair to the players. That wasn't fair to them at all.
I feel that. Yeah.
Now, I do this a lot because people don't know this. So I'll say it to you, Aaron, see if you knew. In the WNBA, women players play from May. Training camp starts in May this year. From May to September or October, and they have 2 days off, and they have to go overseas and play. Right when they get off the plane, they got to go to practice. They play 11 months out the year. A lot of people don't know that. And I'm giving them a month because sometimes they'll take like a couple of weeks off before they go back to training camp, depending on their EuroLeague finals. Mm-hmm. So they play 11 months out the year. Now, I know that people were complaining about the shorter schedule. I mean, you know, the shortened time for the Lakers in Miami. I just want to address that WNBA players play for 11 months. Most of them do. They make their real money overseas.
Yeah.
I don't want to compare the two leagues because I'm not going to do that. But I just want to throw that out there for people to understand. Now, with the NBA players are not used to saying, okay, we get 40 days off, boom. But then they have 4 months off or 3 months off. That's a long time to have off in the middle of a season when your groove is going. Mm-hmm. Not because you didn't make the playoffs. It was because of the coronavirus. So you get your groove going. And all of a sudden, the NBA was like, hold up. Well, Rudy Gobert was like, ah, I'm just going to touch some mics and do some stuff.
He sped it up. He's like, all right, it's going to happen anyway. So let's just happen. Let's just do it now.
But it was something that interests me when people on Twitter was like, we want NBA, we want NBA, we want NBA. And I'm like, okay, guys, you have to think about it from a scheduling perspective. How are they going to do an NBA season with the Olympics coming up? Because they pushed the Olympics back to 2021. The WNBA takes a Olympic break and then they come back because they play in the summer. So they're going to take their Olympic break and then they come back. With the NBA, they're going NBA finals. So there'll probably be four teams fighting for the finals, right? Well, maybe five, right. We'll say.
Yeah.
Some of those players are playing in the Olympics. Will they play? I wonder if LeBron James will play in the Olympics this year.
Ooh, I mean, if they go to the finals again.
I don't think he's
going to. I'd be doubtful. Yeah. because that's a lot of ball. I mean, this is not like he, you know, he used to do that in his late 20s, you know, going from like the championship with Miami to like Olympics, things like that. But he's not 27, 28 anymore. You know, he's on the tail end. So I can see him saying, we have plenty of talent. We have plenty of guys capable. I'm going to take a step back. So yeah, it definitely brings up questions because of that like quick turnaround. But one reason I was happy to have you on, Amber, is because you have this unique perspective as somebody that was, you know, very involved in athletics, and you know, you have some perspective on like you went through an injury and you had to rehab from that and come back from that. So like, break it down for the people, like what does that consist of? Because I mean, it ties into the Jamal Murray incident, and also I feel like it has a little bit to do with like the compressed schedule. So could you answer for us, do you feel like that injury was a result of like overuse, you know, just a lot of games in a short time? And then also what, like what is it involve trying to deal with something like that? Just trying to come back from it.
Ooh, it's tough. I had an Achilles tear from overuse at work. I didn't even do it playing basketball, which is something I love.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even do it playing basketball. Sucks. I did it working. The overuse of my Achilles, right? I used to deliver mail. If you guys don't know, I used to be a mail woman. Yes. I was walking 12.5 miles a day on uneven ground. So 5 or 6 days a week, just depending on how much I wanted to work. Now, my doctor said, okay, your Achilles is wearing out. You're walking too much. I said, doc, I've been playing basketball my whole life. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I've never had an Achilles injury. He was like, but you're using it too much. It's wearing out. And eventually they went in and they said it was torn. So overuse. Jamal Murray, short stint. He just had that heroic run in a bubble. He might have taken a week or two off and then was like, okay, I got to get back to training because we don't have training camp. We're just kind of hopping into it. Mm-hmm. So for him, he's thinking, man, I had this historic run. The pressure of him wanting to do the same thing in a regular season, maybe. But the way he landed, when they showed the front camera, I said, oh, I saw his knee shift. And when he went down, I knew it. The pressure that these athletes put on their bodies, especially running and jumping, it's crazy. You can just, can see when they jump their leg muscles, you can just see it. Mm-hmm. And I think the short season had a lot to do with Jamal Murray's injury. That stress he put on his knee when he stepped, I think he stepped the wrong way or the impact was too much. And his knee did something it was not supposed to and he went down. And they knew immediately. They knew immediately because he grabbed his knee. He was screaming in pain. The short season, yes. Rehab-wise, never torn an ACL. But the Achilles rehab is gruesome. It's gruesome. It was my first surgery. First Achilles injury ever. It's gruesome. I had surgery January 22nd of 2021, right before the panty hit. So I was at home anyway. Yes. I was locked up anyway. I couldn't do nothing anyway. I had a hard cast on for about 8 weeks. I fell a couple of times because I had to come up the porch with a crutch. I tried to put my foot down, but I had a hard cast on and I just fell flat on my face. Tough. I played my first bit of basketball in December. Mind you, I do not have the trainers that they have. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I'm throwing it out there for you.
Yeah. A little different.
I got to kind of do some rehab on my own and rehab with physical therapy. I did 6 months of physical therapy. And then I went back into the gym, like playing basketball. Well, I was getting jump shots up and stuff like that around September. I went back to playing half court basketball in December, played a little full court, played full court in January, played some full court in February, March played some full court. And now I'm playing full court like 3 or 4 times a week, back to my regular schedule.
Nice.
I don't have that quick twitch jump because I haven't been working on my leg strength as much as I should be. Mm-hmm. But Kevin Durant wasn't ready when the bubble happened. And that was 18 months out of his surgery. I believe my doctor said he was 18 months out because he had surgery in June. The bubble happened late last summer, I want to say. So Kevin Durant wasn't even ready. But I feel probably 90% for my Achilles injury. It's a tough rehab. I don't know how the ACL rehab is, though. I'm not quite sure. But I know the Achilles injury is one of the toughest to come back from. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure
the ACL isn't easy either. I know the recovery time is similar. It's definitely approaching a year. And mm-hmm. what they were saying is another issue of this is, like, if the season goes back to normal, if we get back to this point next year, which is the 12-month mark, this is mm-hmm. playoffs.
Yeah.
So if Jamal Murray can't come back, let's say he comes back in 10 months or 11, even if he's back, I don't think he's going to be the same Jamal, because it's usually – when you see guys tear their ACL, they're not the same the next season. It's usually the season after where they're 100%. So this could impact two Nuggets playoff runs, which is extremely unfortunate to see. I hate it for him. I hate it for the team. I hate it for the league. And, it just really sucks. Because like as you said, you know, that bubble run was special, and he was really on a roll. He was catching his stride. So, this brings me to my last question. When on this one, does this call into question the play-in tournament in any way? Because I've seen people question that now. You know, you probably have to put in more effort. Because let's say you're the eighth seed. In a typical year, you're three games ahead of ninth. You're like, we good. You know, you can kind of say, let's rest our guys. We made it. Let's get ready for the playoffs. This year, you're in the play-in. So you can't chill. You can't sit back. Because you can still miss on the playoffs, even in the eighth seed or something like that. So now you probably have to play your guys more deeper into the season because the stakes are still high. And then that maybe stretches out the season a little bit more. You have to play more games. You have to play one or two play-in games. And then that's another question that people have about this whole scenario. So, like, have you been a fan of the play-in? I know for myself, as a fan, I like it. But I can see why players do not like it, especially if you're an eighth seed and you typically would be good, but now you're not. Your safety net is gone.
Out the window.
Yeah.
out the window. Because you're like, man, if we can just get that eighth seed, because if you're 10th, like, say for instance, you are 10th right now, you're like, man, if we can just get that eighth seed, we can get in.
right.
No more. Even the seventh seed. Like, man, we can try to, man, but we good. We're seventh seed. We're five games up. Not anymore.
Not this year.
That matchup is not going to fit you. This is how I feel about it, Aaron. This is how I feel. The teams at the top are going to get a break. Your Phoenix, mm-hmm. your Utah, I think the Clippers get a break. All those teams at the top get a break.
Sure.
Denver, the Lakers, Portland, Dallas, who else is it? Memphis, San Antonio for now, and Golden State are like, oh, goodness. And Curry is already playing crazy minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My question for you is the matchups. The matchups matter. So if Dallas stays at 7 and Portland stays at 6, let's just say that, mm-hmm. they match up against Golden State in that playing game, Curry's going to play 45 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Then he has to turn around if the 10 wins. I think they play they play the next highest remaining seed, which would be Utah. So then they would have to turn around and play Utah. That's
hey, good tough. Luck.
Exactly. It's luck. Hard to play in Utah. The players talk about it. It's hard to play in Utah. It's hard to play in Denver. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's a tough turnaround for Golden State, especially when they rely on one guard, 6'3 guard, to carry them.
Dallas, he's everything.
Dallas would be a little bit easier. Dallas is like, okay, we got multiple guys we can rely on. Golden State doesn't have that. So that wear and tear for Golden State is a lot more than that wear and tear for Dallas, even Memphis, even San Antonio, because they don't rely on one person. Golden State relies on Steph.
Mm-hmm. That's facts.
You don't want Steph to break down over a playing game. I mean, you know, hopefully Clay can come back next season with his – he tore his Achilles. Oh, I think he'll be out for a long period of time as well because the way he moves and shoots, I think that'll impact him just a little bit more. Yeah. But – what does Golden State do, Aaron? What do they do as far as do they put all their chips in and try to get there? You know, Wiseman's out now. Or do they say, okay, Steph, we don't want to put this wear and tear on your body? Because if you do win that 7-10 matchup, if the standings stay the same, you have to play Utah, and that is not easy. That is not easy.
Not at all. So, I mean, if they're right there in the mix, let's say they're ninth or something like that, oh, they're going to go for it. You know, I feel like, you know, they had a lack of success last year. want to see some wins. You know, the Chase Center is going to be allowing fans back. I'm sure their fans are going to want to see that. The playoff revenue is always nice if they can squeeze in there. So I think they'll go for it. I mean, if they went on a losing streak and they ended up like way out of it, you know, absolutely, they'd definitely like rest Curry. But if there's a chance and they're right there in the mix, they're going to keep fighting. I'm sure Curry wants that. The team wants that. There's a sense of pride there in Golden State, and they want to put themselves back in the playoff mix after a miserable year last year.
Yeah.
So it's tough all the way around for sure.
And you know what else I thought about, Aaron, is those young guns getting that playoff experience. With both
that matters.
Next matters. Year. But I don't want them to run Curry down just to have a first round exit.
That's the fear. That's the fear. It doesn't seem like it's worth it if he does have a major injury. So let's just keep praying that that doesn't happen. He doesn't have to go through that because they've had enough of their injury issues. They've been plagued for the last like 2 years. So they need a break in the worst way.
They do.
But I think that brings us to the end of our conversation, Amber. I want to thank you again for joining me. This is a great time. I'm glad we were able to get real about these issues and put it into light. And then hopefully the NBA, the owners, the Players Association, we can all get together and come to a solution that addresses some of these issues we went over tonight. So thanks again. And before you head out, why don't you let the people know where they can find you on Twitter, and if you want to plug anything else you're involved in right now.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at simplyme_AV. Everything that I do is in my bio. I'm running out of characters, so I kind of need to slow down on things that I do.
I feel the struggle. I'm running out of characters.
Twitter, can I get more characters in my bio? please, we're all asking for that. My dog is barking in the background because somebody's outside. They're building houses in my neighborhood, so he goes crazy with the builders. He just goes bonkers. He's
getting hype, yeah.
He's hype. But I really appreciate you for having me on, Aaron. You're Miami Heat. The Thunder are team tank right now. So
yeah,
I'm cheering that the Heat get the Bucks in the first round because I think they can upset the Bucks. So
I did too. We've done it before. Let's do it again.
But I've embraced team tank for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I'm just letting your listeners and your viewers know that I've embraced the team tank. I didn't like it at first. I did not. But it makes sense. You have all those draft picks. It makes sense. So. But
in a few years, y'all gonna be nice. So,
yeah,
for sure.
How patient am I? Okay, I have to trust the process. All right.
That's right. Y'all got your own process. You know.
Yeah, we do.
You'll be good. But thanks everybody for tuning into this episode. If you want to get involved with Business Casual Basketball, bcbasketball.info is our website online where we have some resources available for you. And then BC Basketball 2 at Twitter and Instagram is where you can find us if you want to get involved with some of our social media content on that side of things. So until next time, guys, thanks for joining us again. Enjoy this rest of your day. Enjoy this NBA season. And we'll be coming back at you with more NBA analysis real soon. Take care.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, guys.